All right, guys. We've been up for 35 hours now. It's getting kind of hard, but if we fall asleep, Freddy's going to kill us. So we gotta keep ourselves awake. Yeah. You gotta keep moving.
I'll tell you, I had a pot of coffee and I could crash right now.
No, Apodaca. No. Like slap your face. Slap your face.
Stay awake, man. Look. I think I got something that's gonna help.
Okay.
All of us stay awake.
Okay.
All right, so I just lower my pants here.
What and, the? How? Why is it always this?
Why?
Okay, and then.
No,
let me
wait.
Let me just staple my scrotum to this chair.
Oh, no! Oh my God! Oh my God!
Nick!
No!
What the?
No!
God!
Stop! Why?
All right. It didn't even go all the way in. Oh my! What the?
I'm gonna. You guys
faint.
Wired?
I'm gonna faint.
No, Heather, stay
I'm
with
gonna
us.
Faint.
Heather, stay with us. No,
Heather, look, Heather. Did she pass out?
She. Oh God, that means she's under the dominion of one Freddy Krueger now.
Welcome to Freddy's world. Watch me staple my scrotum to this chair.
Wait,
bitch.
So it's happening on both sides? It's in a dream world and in a real world. Why are you guys doing this? Wait, Freddy, are you Nick?
It kind of doxed me there.
We jump over snakes, collect bones, and battle Freddy Krueger in NES action platformer A Nightmare on Elm Street this week on How Did This Get Slayed?
Welcome to How Did This Get Slayed, the show where we discuss the worst and weirdest and witchcraftiest horror video games of all time. That spooky third W was courtesy of @DamnYouVodka. Send your Halloween theme submission to @GetPlayedPod #WWW. I'm Nick Geiger Counter, indicating lethal radiation.
I'm Hell Whore and Crammed Corpse.
Oh my God.
I'm here with our third host.
Mine's gonna seem like it sucks. It sucks.
It sucks now.
Man up a darkness. Hello, everyone.
Hey! Hello, everyone, and welcome back, Bucket.
Edge, and hello, darkness, my old friend.
That's
right.
We're. This is going so good so far. Man.
This is the show.
Moments before the record, I was like, oh, shit. I forgot to come up with a name.
Yeah.
Which you could have fooled me because it sounded like you had that one locked and loaded. You were ready to go with that.
Sounded workshop and crafted.
As a hell whore crammed corpse. So. So I made it
good
easy.
God.
I just looked at my own picture in Zoom and I was like, what is that thing?
Hey, we have a spooky, kind of bad. I don't know exactly how I feel about this game that we're going to discuss this week. But before we get into that, before we descend into gaming hell, rather.
Before we descend into gaming Halloween.
Right, we need to spooky up the word hell a little bit.
And making it sound like Halloween is the good. That's perfect. I'm more scared at the thought now.
Before we descend into gaming Halloween, it is first time to briefly touch on a game we're enjoying by spending 70 seconds in gaming heaven. Matt, tell me when to begin.
Begin.
So, very spooky. So, you know, a couple weeks ago, we talked about the legendary, game Portal, which we all just absolutely loved and, you know, have loved for years. Our guest is giving two big thumbs up. And I mentioned that I'd never played Portal 2. And so I've been playing Portal 2.
Wow. Heck yes.
I've been playing Portal 2 for the first time. Our guest was momentarily incensed. We'll talk about this. It just came out at a time where I was like, I just did like, you know, I just started a new job and I just didn't have time for games. And I just never went back to it. But it is a 10 out of 10. It's so fucking good. It's totally a lot goofier. They're just like straight up Simpsons jokes in here. You know, Stephen Merchant is Wheatley and J.K. Simmons is Cave Johnson, who are the other characters kind of supplement GLaDOS's, you know, VO. It's like the design of all the various, because what I love is that they don't give you a new weapon, at least as far in as I am, about 8 hours in. It's all just riffs on the same Portal weapon, but with new environmental hazards and new mechanics introduced environmentally. It's just like, it's really fucking a sleek way of doing, of yes anding, if you will, the original premise of the game. They really just grow on it.
Time's up.
Yeah.
Wait, did you say that you aren't finished?
Yeah, not finished yet.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. That's why I'm withholding.
I'm not going to ruin anything for you.
I'm excited to finish it. I'm not far off. Not far from the finish line.
Okay.
But I'm really enjoying it. I'm glad I'm playing it. I'm glad I was motivated to, I'm glad I had a reason to go back to this game. Because I clearly missed out.
Finally, something positive came from doing the show. This is great.
Hey, something else positive is this week's guest. Very, very excited to have him. A film critic for The Atlantic and host of the podcast Blank Check with Griffin and David. David Sims is here. Hi, David.
Hi, thank you for having me. How had you never played Portal 2? This is bananas to me.
And
I'm
sorry. Loved Portal 1. I loved Portal 1. I just never went back to it. I think it was like, it was just timing wise. You know, when it came out, I had just started a new job and I was just like, had less time for games. And it was just like, oh, I want to play that. I even mentioned on the show that I replayed Portal when Portal 2 came out in anticipation of playing Portal 2. And then I didn't actually end up playing it. Which is insane. It was a bad decision, but again, I'm glad 10 years later I finally got to it. Great game.
It's a top 10 game for me. I've played it so many times. It makes me very happy. Is that a crazy opinion? I have no idea.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, it's not in my top 10, but I also don't think it's a crazy opinion. I think my opinions are crazy.
Well, that's fair. We're all crazy. It's right. The inventiveness within the limitations, like without, you know, just completely upending the game and, you know, having the protagonist speak and giving you lots of weapons and having different. I don't know. I think it's a beautifully scripted game. It's very sad. It's very special. It's very funny. Like you said, I don't know. I don't want to spoil it either. So I don't want to say anymore.
No, but I'm far enough in where, like, you know, I've experienced like a lot of how much the world of Aperture, you know, the Aperture Labs kind of expands, and just seeing like kind of, I was not expecting all the retrofuturism that exists in the game. I certainly knew that J.K. Simmons, you know, and Stephen Merchant were in it, but I didn't know. I thought it was all, I didn't realize we're going to sort of learn the history of this company and some of the history of the player character as well. It's really well done, and it's also like it uses a light touch with all that.
Yes.
You know,
and yet the J.K. Simmons character, it's perfect satire of
very funny
America, but also, you know, kind of a video game creation, I feel like, a little bit.
Right.
I don't know. Yeah. He's very, very funny.
It's great. It's delightful.
Yes. Yes. Yep.
So you mentioned you mentioned Portal 2 is in your top 10. What? Because I know you are a gamer. You're a big time gamer. The two of us will talk about games here and there. What are some other things that would throw in there? You don't have to give all 10, but just to give us a sense of your personal preferences.
My sort of touchstone games, they're very boring. It's like Civilization 2.
Hell yeah.
You know, Super Mario World. We talk about Super Mario World a lot. That's my pinnacle game in that.
Wow.
Whatever franchise,
yes,
you know, what in that series, it Deus Ex, the original Deus Ex, the 2001 right. Deus Ex, that is sort of my like favorite game of all time, and I play it like every year, which is a slightly embarrassing opinion because it's sort of a janky game with a lot of problems, but it's that kind of like sort of pre 9/11. It's 2000, not 2001. Conspiracy fueled, like sort of end of history nonsense, like that's like baked into the plot where people are quoting Thomas Aquinas at you, and you know, like just the weird sort of loopy. What's the word I'm looking for here? You know, like I have you guys ever played Deus Ex, original Deus Ex?
No,
I can't. I've never played for Deus Ex. If you ever want to do Deus Ex, it's a long game.
I'd love to play it. I know, because you know, it's kind of one of the progenitors of the sort of immersive sim genre, and absolutely. Like I played the System Shock franchise, which I
also
believe,
very close to my heart. Yes, yes.
Which I believe Warren Spector also worked on. Yes, like, yeah, I'm certainly familiar with this lineage. Yes, and Thief. Yeah,
those were all games that when I was 14 years old, like PC games, me and my best friend Ollie, shout out Ollie, would just sit in a dark room, the curtains drawn, playing, one of us sitting next to the player, just sort of having a lot of fun, not really going outside. It's, you know, very, very special memories. All three of the games you just mentioned.
Yeah, that's so many of my favorite times as a kid was just like either playing video games alone or with friends, which mm-hmm. is just, I guess, you know, it kind of informs the adult you turn into. But it just like I had a similar sort of thing with my older brother, Nate, is that he, you know, I like very often a lot of my early gaming would be just like watching him play. And Matt, I know that was kind of your experience with your uncle.
Yeah, yeah. Just like not really knowing what he was doing or how to do it, but being entertained, just being like, wow, mm-hmm. like not understanding anything I'm hearing about Metal Gear, but knowing that I can't stop watching it. And now my yeah. experience playing Metal Gear is still not really understanding what I'm hearing, but enjoying it on my own.
There's something you mentioned, and I think maybe this is something that Heather will have a take on in a recent episode of Blank Check. You were talking about, and I believe it's the Sega World Store, but maybe it has a different name. There's a mall fixture at some point. There was a Sega specific store.
Sega World. It was called Sega World.
Okay.
Yes. It was in the Trocadero, which is a fancy old building in London. I grew up in London. No one's making fun of me. Okay, that's great.
What?
People make fun of me when I say it on my podcast. Okay, thank yeah. you, Nate.
What's all this then?
I believe it was operational for 3 years, 96 to 99. It was like basically just a big arcade, but it was Sega themed. And right. it was a classic, like my dad being like, all right, the two of us, we're going to go to the Rainforest Cafe, then we're going to Sega World, and then we're going to see a movie. And that'll be like a sort of, you know, boys day out
right.
on a Saturday or whatever, right? Like, you know, we'll go see like Tomorrow Never Dies or whatever the sort of hot movie was that weekend. And also very fond memories, even though I feel for my dad, because in my memory, like it must have been pure hell. Sega World, the Rainforest Cafe and the movie was fine. Mm-hmm. But yeah. Sega World was just this dark, windowless, you know, blaring place with like, you know, lights flashing everywhere and just... I have no idea what he got out of that.
So I have seen pictures of Sega World my whole life, and I have mm-hmm. never met a human being who's been inside it. It looks like a Blade Runner airplane terminal. Like it is yes. tubes of neon.
Yes,
and
tubes. Very like, tube centric. Yes.
Yeah, very tube. It's a tubey place. I had always thought it was like a branch of GameWorks, which was the GameWorks SKG, was the DreamWorks game place in Las Vegas. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize that they were unrelated because they had sort of the same visual aesthetic. Looking it up again, I'm like, oh, fuck, man. I remember seeing photos of this place when I was like, I can't believe you were in this place. And also that you described it as a bummer, as a windowless.
I loved it. I mean, to be clear, I was happy. I just feel for my dad. That's all.
if my girlfriend was as abnormal as I am, or as atypical, there is no normal. If she liked dumb shit as much as I like dumb shit, this is what our house would look like. Like, it would be...
You would go up an escalator surrounded by neon rings, I assume would be the first thing, right?
Yeah. You'd the toilets would be hot pink and ice cold for no reason. I would love it.
I think Sega World was a disaster. I'm now looking at the Wikipedia page for Sega World. I think it was a financial. Yes. It was sort of in that rough period, right? The sort of Sega Saturn era of Sega, right, where they were having a lot of mistakes or whatever, like financial problems.
Yeah, I wish it was a better run. I wish Sega overall was a better run company because they have done so much cool shit. But
it was only open for 3 years exactly. Yeah. It opened on 7 September 1996. And then closed on 7 September 1999, which means it didn't make it to the launch of the Dreamcast.
Right. Yeah. I think different locations had, had different runs. Some of them were open for a very short amount of time. I believe the Sega World London one, at least if this entry is to be trusted, was open in some form until the 2000s. But yeah, when you mentioned it, I was like, wait, we had like World of Nintendo. We had various Nintendo themed stores in our malls. And then I didn't even make the connection that it was, this was something that was only in Europe. And if you look at it, the areas it was in, it's really just Japan and Asia and the UK and Australia where there were actual Sega Worlds.
As of this record, there was actually a kind of a really sad Sega closing this week, which was of the big red Sega arcade in Akihabara in Tokyo. Which has been featured in video games. Like, it is a famous arcade location.
Wow.
How would you survive a pandemic as an arcade? Like, they've got it worse than movies, because at least in movies, you don't have to touch anything. And a huge crowd of people gathered outside, like enormous crowd of people gathered to say goodbye to the Sega arcade in Akihabara. It was really touching.
Yeah, I mean, arcades are so cool. I do, nowadays it feels like the barcade persists, and then there's certainly like your big old, the chain restaurant equivalent, the Dave and Buster's of the world, but it's really not the same experience as like I don't know. For me, it was always like the grimy local arcade, and like that kind of had its own appeal.
It was the grimy local arcade. I used to go to I'm just shouting out random London locations now, a place called Rowan's, which still stands, which was like a bowling alley that had a big arcade attached to it. And, and that like ages between like 12 and 15, when like I was allowed to go out independently, but like there wasn't like a ton that I could do. That was the place to, you could sort of be an independent teen there, because like I wasn't, yet trying to party particularly hard. I was really just happy to play Street Fighter and bowl. And I would order something called the combo platter, which I believe was chicken nuggets, fries, and onion rings, just like piled in a bowl. And I would just eat that and feel great.
Also, I was mistaken and need to correct myself before this goes on. It was not in Akihabara. It was in Ikebukuro. The Akihabara one closed last year. The one that closed this week was Ikebukuro.
So they're both closed. So it's worse.
Yeah, it's worse.
It's just like we're celebrating Sega. Like, that doesn't happen anymore. Just like it's very pinnacle of the 90s thing, right? Where it's like we've all come to celebrate Sega. I guess we still might celebrate Nintendo, but that's about it.
You mentioned your connection to Sega World, but were you just playing PC games? Did you have any consoles at home?
My console history. So my mother was very against me owning a console that connected to the television. I think she just, when I was a little kid, it disturbed her. I don't know. It was too much. Right. She could not handle the concept. So for some reason, she decided that I could own a Sega Game Gear, which was the first console I ever bought. I think she talked herself into it because it was like backlit, and guess she thought it would be less hard on my eyes. Although the Game Gear, I love it, but it's a little hard on the eyes. It's not a huge screen.
Right.
So that was, I would play that devotedly. I would just plug it into the wall and, that was my console until I was, I don't know, probably like 11 or so years old. I saved up my allowance and bought a Super Nintendo used. bought like one generation back because I could not afford a, you know, new console. And I came home with it. And my mom was like, "You're not allowed that." And my dad was like, "It's over. Like, this kid saved this. He saved his money for like 20 weeks or something so he could buy like a $35, you know, like it's over. You got it. Right. He won." And that was it. That broke the duck. After that, like, she bought my brother, you know, a GameCube or what, you know what I mean? Like,
right.
I just had to sort of break in the concept of like, look, whatever, like, you know, it's okay. All I'm going to do is rot my brain with this, you know, 6 hours a day. But so, yeah, so I was mostly a Nintendo boy. But I had a Game Gear, so that always had my foot was always a little bit in the Sega world because of that,
right?
And I like PC games too. I was a dork. I was a big dork, played video games all the time.
I just want to give a shout out to how smoothly you dismissed an incredible injustice in your life, which was your brother getting fucking consoles,
Heather,
after you had been denied them your whole life. I'm angry on your behalf. I'm angry for all the big brothers out there.
I had to work through that long ago, but I mean, I remember the day he got a Wii the day it came out. Like, and I remember coming, by then I was in college. I think I was like 19 when the Wii came out. And I remember coming home and being like, mostly like, oh, let me try this thing. What, you move it around and it works? Like, you know, I do, if you guys remember, like, that was genuinely kind of magical to watch that happen.
Yeah.
But yes. And then there was the side of me like, so she's like went to the store and pre-ordered this. Like, she made the effort, you know, like, it's not just like she, you know, picked it up. Like, she actually like thought, okay, all right. Ugh. Okay, fine. Well, I saved $2 a week for £2 a week for a Super Nintendo.
I'll be grumpy for the next 20 minutes thinking about this for you. But I also want to say that I also had a Game Gear. And
hell yeah.
Unlike the Game Boy, which was, you still have it? Are you about to put it in a, oh my God, no, he's going to bring it in a frame?
My games
are
right
here. Oh, yeah.
I do have the Game Gear, but it's in pretty crappy condition at this point. I bought one of those, what are they called? Analog, the pocket, but it hasn't come out. You know, it hasn't come out yet. So yes, well, I'm very excited for it because you can play Game Gear games on it.
Oh man, all I want to do is play Final Fantasy Tactics Advance, which I think I've talked about on this podcast for 2 years. Mm-hmm. Is like, as soon as I get it, I'm going to finish this game that I have never finished. But back to the Game Gear. Yes. For those of you who didn't have a Game Gear, the Game Boy was like an angular, like, brick. You know, it was like holding like a little, like a thick tablet. The Game Gear was round like a shoe. Like, it was like a soft-edged, thick, all like swollen feeling little machine that sucked down batteries so fast. Like, you could, if I was going on a car ride with my parents, it could not last the car ride. Like, there was just no way to do it. And it was lot of batteries.
So heavy, because you had 6 AAA batteries in it. You were like, you know, it was not easy in the arms. Like, it did not sit easy.
I'm sure you experienced this, although maybe not, because fucking London had Sega World. I should have just moved there and abandoned my home.
One ticket to Sega World, please.
I'd like to go home, please. No. But there was nobody to talk to about Game Gear games. Nobody. Like, nobody I knew had a fucking Game Gear.
I can't believe I'm telling this story. I mean, this is not an embarrassing story. It's just ridiculous. I put an ad in like my elementary school, I guess on the bulletin board or something, being like, if anyone has any Game Gear games, they want to, like, you know, trade or sell me or just like, please. And then I remember finally someone called me and was like, yeah, I have Sonic Triple Trouble. You want it? And I was like, yeah, I want it. You kidding me? I like bought it off it for $10. And like, but that was the only, like, it was like I had to send out like a signal and like one person of hundreds answered. It was, and you would go to the store, you know, looking for Game Gear games, and they'd be like, Game Gear? Yeah, I guess we have a few. I don't know. You know, like, it was not a thing where it was ever easy to, and anyway, I mean, I did love my Game Gear. Heather, did you play Sonic 2? You know, the Master System port.
I played Sonic 2. I played Columns. I played Mortal Kombat on the Game Gear. Mortal Kombat on the Game Gear was my primary Mortal Kombat experience until I got it for Sega CD, where it would load like in between every fatality and was just awful, awful trash.
Yeah, I was very into the Mighty Morphin Power Rangers fighting game, which I believe is good.
Yeah, it is.
I think I was right at the time to love it, but I just remember Sonic 2. I was so difficult. And now, of course, it's this thing where like now I'm a grown up and I can like Google it and read that like, yeah, that game made no sense for the Game Gear because the Game Gear had a square, tiny screen.
Right.
And it couldn't fit the game in. And so the game was so hard because you were like doing blind jumps all the time. And, you know, the boss, bosses were more difficult because it just literally, and they just let poor 7-year-old David try and figure that out. It was, you know, it was a very punishing experience often, but I loved it.
The screen was 160 by 144. So it was just a tiny little thing in terms of pixels. And
it'd be funny to emulate at real resolution on a 4K screen,
just
a Game Gear game.
Yeah. we should pivot to this week's game. But before we get into that, I am curious that you brought up something pertaining to this, David, and actually your background on Zoom right now reflects this sequence that in Freddy's Dead, which is a Nightmare on Elm Street film I have not seen, there is a Freddy plays video games and uses that to malicious ends scene. Yes. Can you talk us through that?
The character who is under threat in this scene is played by Breckenmeyer, a very young Breckenmeyer, who is a stoner who likes video games. And at this point, all of the Freddy kills in those movies are these sort of like weird, ironic, like, oh, the kid dies doing what he loves. So, you know, like this sort of weird, like they're not even trying to punish them anymore. But I recommend you guys, anyone listening as well, just Google the scene. It is bananas because it's sort of cutting between Freddy playing a Nintendo and sort of moving Breckenmeyer around. And then in real life, the sleeping Breckenmeyer is like bouncing around the room while his friends are like, oh no, you have to wake up. Like, like, you know, and it is rendered in such a baffling. It's clearly like people who have not played video games being like, what's a video game? They kind of bounce around on platforms, right? Yeah, we'll right. do that. You know, like it has this like very lazy approach, but you're constantly cutting to Freddy with his feet up. At one point, he drops a power glove reference, so clearly they knew what the power glove was, or at least, you know, they asked around if there was anything they could do with gloves.
They'd seen the Freddy wizard, maybe.
A famous glove, right?
Right.
And you know, he eventually, like, knocks him down the stairs, and that's how he dies. It's pretty lame. I think he probably says game over. I can't remember. But
the most baffling bit of information to me about this is that somehow Freddy is piped into what's going on and knows what a power glove is. Who's telling Freddy? Like is he reading a Nintendo Power? Like, how does he get this information? Like, that doesn't make sense to me.
It doesn't make any sense. Freddy's supposed to be a creepy janitor who, like, abducts children. He's not supposed to be up on, like, whatever the latest trends are. He's supposed to be dead as well, you know, like he lives only in dreams, but apparently he knows about the power glove. I don't know. It's the worst Freddy movie, the sixth Freddy.
I'm gonna be upset for the next 20 minutes.
An admission to make before we dive into the game, which is that I have never seen a single Nightmare on Elm Street movie.
Wow. Not one.
And my knowledge of the Freddy Krueger pantheon is based on Rick and Morty's parody of it. And that's about it. So I had the opportunity. I was like, okay, I could either watch A Nightmare on Elm Street and play this game, or I could make assumptions about the movie based on what the game tells me. Mm-hmm. And it turns out that the game is not a great informant because it's not no. based on A Nightmare on Elm Street. It's based on the whole, the total, like the film, the franchise.
Yes.
Of Nightmare yes. on Elm Street. It doesn't tell you a story and it's fucking crazy.
So A Nightmare on Elm Street comes out in 1990. At this point, 5 Freddy movies have been released. So this is in between A Nightmare on Elm Street 5 and the film that Sims mentioned, Freddy's Dead. That's when this game releases. So yeah, it's got a lot of established lore at this point. And also Freddy has kind of turned into he starts off a little bit more menacing and then eventually kind of turns into to the self-parody of himself.
He goes the Godzilla route, you know, where it's yeah. like, oh my God, what a nightmare on Elm Street this guy is. And then by the end, he's like hanging out with Mothra and like doing high fives with his baby son. That's what I'm right. going to say. Should I jump into a
Let's
little bit of background
it.
On this game? Okay. So as Nick mentioned, A Nightmare on Elm Street was released in 1990 in both North America and the EU. It is loosely based on the franchise. Other video games in 1990 included F-Zero, Super Mario World, Metal Gear Solid 2, Solid Snake, Final Fantasy 3, and Castle of Illusion starring Mickey Mouse, which I only say is because the animation in that game was so incredible that I thought I was yeah. watching a cartoon when I was a kid. Anyway, it is a 4-player game. If you had the 4-player multi-tap for the NES, I didn't do any research into whether all 4 characters are on screen at the same time. I can't imagine that the Nintendo was capable of that. So I assume you switch between characters. You take on the role of a teen and you collect what I thought were wrenches, but it turns out were bones.
They're bones.
But I thought I was like, oh, I got to fix something like this, like you clear, and you have to collect them all because these are the bones of Freddy and you have to throw them in an incinerator in order right. to beat him at the end of the game, which I'm only going to assume was also the plot of the movie, that a teenager collects the bones and puts them in a fire. It's a Castlevania style side scrolling adventure game with a really, really, really remarkable and brand new power meter, which is your sleep meter. And your sleep meter drains. And when it goes all the way to 0, you enter the dream world in like a Wayne's World-esque, for those of you 90s, Wayne's
World-esque.
Yeah. You enter the dream world where Freddy's powers are stronger and your powers are weaker, until you collect power-ups that allow you to transform into a ninja, a wizard, and hold on, what was the other one?
It's the ninja's the shadow warrior and the wizard yeah. is the necromancer and the third one is the acrobat.
Right, which I know because I have the instruction manual open, but if you're playing this game without the instruction manual, you have no fucking idea.
Right.
Why?
But this is the era, yeah.
What?
But this is the era where you get this context from manuals. You
so
know,
let
that's,
me,
that's the only way to know.
So let me get this straight. In Nightmare mm-hmm. on Elm Street, they're collecting bones in the real world to burn Freddy, who's haunting them in their dreams. And then they realize that they can take on the powers of Freddy, like dream powers, and be like sort of lucid dream their way to attack him. So they take up, they will become a Dungeons and Dragons characters in order to assault him.
So I, unlike you, did watch the movie this week because I had never seen it before. And Heather, wow. What if I told you bones aren't even part of it?
Really? Wait, they don't like collect his bones and burn them?
I would say the only bones in the movie are within the bodies of the people.
They are, right, and they are there.
And they're That's, there. Yeah. They don't we always assume. Tell you that, but they are
it's
there.
It's implied.
Every movie has bones in it, I should say.
That seemed like such a plausible plot point that I was sure that my later jokes about the streets being full of snakes and bats and rocks falling from the sky were going to land a little harder because the bones bit was just straight from the movie.
Yeah. No, this is huge liberties with the franchise. Although I will say, you know, because especially early on in the game, it's like you don't want to fall asleep. I honestly, even when you get powered up, you don't really want to fall asleep. The enemies are more aggro. They're more durable. It's like harder.
They're scarier looking. And,
yeah. And that does tie in with the film. Like the films, It's like no one wants to fall asleep because they're terrified of what will happen. And Then also it feels like it's very often, you know, like the resolution of it is we have to go into our dreams and beat Freddy at his own game, which is kind of what you end up doing in the boss fights as well. It's like where we go into our dreams and we take advantage of the dream world to finally, you know, take out this killer. We should say real quick that this was developed by, you know, because this has a pretty innovative mechanic. It's developed by Rare.
Rare. It was developed by Rare. Like
I
Rare.
Was stunned to learn Rare. This. Yes. Rare.
Rare. Like, Rare developed it and published, and LJN published it. LJN published a lot of various of games we've covered on this podcast. Honestly, mostly licensed games of varying quality in the NES and Game Boy era.
Is LJN the one with the rainbow logo?
With the rainbow, yeah. They're a toy company that started making games, and then they basically made so much garbage, like, you know, Jaws and the Karate Kid, and then also, like, the Friday the 13th game, which we were all right with, and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, which sucks. This was their bread and butter, these kind of licensed games, and they just churned them out.
Yeah.
There are a couple of details in this game that I would like to highlight. One is that because you don't want to fall asleep, you got to drink coffee. That's fucking rad. I don't know if that's in the movies, but like, talk about a great video game mechanic. Your health is draining the entire time, crank style, and you have to get more crank in order to keep going. The other is, I don't know that I've ever seen this in a game. When you die, you become an angel. Right. And you fly to heaven.
And then you're right back.
It's great. With,
yes.
It's very sweet.
So you guys are all Nightmare on Elm Street pros. Can I ask, does anybody in these movies ever, I mean, is that, first off, is the necromancer ninja shit, is that in any of them?
Kind of, I will say. Because I feel like, not so much in the first one, but in the later ones, there will often be sequences where the kids kind of take on each other's interests and use them to fight Freddy. So, yeah, there's like a kid who does like ninja stuff to Freddy or what, you know, like that. There's right. things like that that will happen. It's not quite as clean, but, you know, it's a little inspired, I guess.
So,
right?
Yeah.
So does anybody.
Sort of the Dream Warriors era of Nightmare on Elm Street. Yeah.
Right.
Yes.
That's one of the movies.
Right.
Dream Warriors.
Dream Warriors. There's a song. It's a good song.
That's awesome. We need to play it right now. Yeah, we need to play that it's song good. Right now. Unplanned, unprompted. Apodaca's going to look it up. While I point out that if I was in this situation, I would dream that I was Freddy so that I could beat him.
Oh,
like that would be my first tactic, would be like, well, I'll become Freddy because he's not going to be able to kill himself. Right? It'd be an equal match.
Yeah. I think that would really, he'd be caught off guard by that. I don't think he'd know quite how to handle it.
What's he sound like? Is he like, hey, I'm Freddy Krueger?
Honestly,
kind of, actually.
That's spot on. Yeah.
Kind of nailed it.
Exactly like that.
Yeah, Freddy, unlike, you know, Jason or Michael Myers, he's a ham. He talks.
Yes.
He likes to make, even before he becomes very gag heavy, you know, he converses. He's got things to say to you while he's trying to chase you around with his glove.
That was sort of my observation about watching the movie for the first time, was you have like Jason or Michael Myers who sort of just like lumber around, and their presence is intimidating because they're so slow and like they don't really say anything. They don't say anything at all. And then Freddy is like, like chasing you and stuff. And it's like, that's not, he's not that scary. I mean, getting killed is scary no matter what. But comparatively, he's goofy.
He's kind of a cartoon, and, yeah. and they lean into that more and more, and, you know, there's very often, like, some sort of pun related to, you know, whatever ironic punishment he's dishing out to a teen. So, like, if it's, like, a kid, is a waiter, and so, and then he punishes him by putting him in, like a diner from hell, and he has to eat blades or something like that, and he's, like, dine and slash, bitch. You know, he's got something
to
punctuate.
He likes to say bitch.
He does like to say bitch.
Yeah.
I have the song real quick.
Here we go.
Let's listen to it.
Yeah.
Appa Doc has brought up the music video for this song, and it looks like somebody is constructing a ransom note in 3D. Cutting up magazines and building
a house.
Have
you seen Nightmare 3? It's my personal favorite. Patricia Arquette, there she is,
yeah.
The star.
I've seen all of them through I've seen 1 through 5.
Yes, those are the good ones. You did fine. You don't need to see the rest. Well, New Nightmare is the other good one. I never saw
New Nightmare.
Right.
This
People
is
like
good
that.
Already.
It's so good.
New Nightmare was written by one of the writers on Mary's show Monsterland on Hulu.
Wow.
On Hulu.
Oh, cool. Yeah.
So this song's a banger, clearly. And you know what else I kind of liked? You know, we mentioned this game was developed by Rare.
Music.
And it's got an early David Wise score. David Wise, who later famously composed for the Donkey Kong Country series, did the music for this game. And It's got, you know, those let's play the overworld theme. What plays when you're out about the street wandering between the various houses? So Koji Kondo, the legendary Nintendo composer, had an interview where he said that when he's composing for games, he'll very often take his track and then just have it playing on the background for like an hour, and like while he's doing something else, and see if he gets sick of it. And I think that's the case with this one. It's like a relatively short loop, you know, it's like whatever, 16 or 32 bars. But it's so like I never got tired of it. And I never reached a point where I was like, oh, God, this is fucking annoying. I think it's a nice little ditty.
Yeah, it's
rules.
It's a pretty smooth jam. Also, this will be my second correction of the episode. Wesley Strick did not write A New Nightmare. He wrote A Nightmare on Elm Street. The 2010. Wow.
Oh, the remake. Yeah.
Okay. Very cool. Yeah. I was also gonna say, you know, there's a little music when you go inside there's different music when you're inside the houses or the junkyard or what have you. There's different, you know, boss music. So there's some cool tracks in this game. I was also going to say regarding Rare, and this is I'll put this question to the floor. So here it is. Including A Nightmare on Elm Street, this game, how many Rare developed games were released in the year 1990? So Nightmare on Elm Street comes out in 1990. How many other Rare developed games or Rare developed games total came out in this year?
What an
we're
interesting
question.
We're
just supposed
question.
To guess?
Yeah, anyone take a guess?
4.
Heather says 4.
3.
3 from Sims.
I'm going to say 8.
Matt wins it by coming closest without going over. The correct answer is 18.
Oh, my Rare God.
Rare developed 18 games that were released in 1990. In addition to Nightmare on Elm Street, they released a few different ports, a bunch of different NES games, including Snake Rattle and Roll, which I had for the Nintendo. It's actually a pretty good little game. Solar Jetman, which a lot of people like. You know, they had the home editions of Double Dare and Jeopardy. They also made they ported Arch Rivals. And Narc, 2 arcade games to NES, and then they released a couple of Game Boy games. So they were just churning them out. And that any of these were at any level of quality at all is just like, it's, I don't know, it's really something. They were just kind of a factory of you know, just making as much, like they just had all these projects they were just churning out, and then some of them were actually pretty decently playable. I mean, I guess we should talk about how this game actually plays, because I think it's not bad, right? It's like, it's a little, the control's a little stiff, but it's okay.
Yeah, I mean, I messed around with it for a little bit, and then you know, couldn't finish it, because I couldn't finish it because it sucks. Like, it's like, it's not like it's good.
Right.
But like, it is playable. Like, it's for the time, it would be a very playable game, I think. And you know, that dream mechanic is good. Like, that is an interesting enough thing to be like, ah, shit, I gotta find a coffee to wake up. That is in its of itself, like a reason to play the game. That is like a really killer mechanic, I think. And then the power-ups are cool. Freddy, I will say, when you get to Freddy, or, you know, when Freddy comes to you, I guess, because, you know, one, two, he's going to get you.
That's true.
He's very easy. I never was like, I was always just like, I was more bothered by Freddy, his presence. I'm like, just enough with this. I don't have time for you, Freddy. I got other things to be doing here.
Well, it depends on which form of Freddy you're fighting, because there's different. There's like Freddy is the man, and there's also Freddy kind of, you know, like his in various kind of like
his big hand.
Like,
yeah, exactly. Big hand. They're various body parts of Freddy that you have to focus on.
Like Freddy, the chain of balls.
Yes.
Which I am going to assume, having not seen the movie, was how he appeared the first time any of the kids saw him, is that he was a long chain of balls with a hand.
His scary, scary hand.
The truth is, that's so unsettling if you were to see it in the real world that you'd be like, this sucks, this is terrifying. Whereas at least if it's a human man in a hat, you're like, okay, well, at least I have context for what I'm looking at.
Right.
Whereas the other, like a set of like balls that came out of the wall with a hand attached, you'd be like, oh, I'm dealing with something that doesn't even work on like the reasonable expectations of the world.
to that point too, though, Heather, and not to go back to the movie too much, but I was surprised that the very first thing you see in the movie is Freddy making his scary glove. And to me, that's not as scary. He was like, he had this idea. He was like, I gotta go get some leather and some knives real quick. I got this thing's gonna be crazy. Like, just the idea that he had the idea for it. That's less scary to me than if it was just his hand.
It's the problem with Freddy in the later movie. As his bits get more elaborate, you start thinking about how much time he put into the bits and less about how much he loves to murder children, which is supposed to be scary about it. Yes. I found this game, it's playable. I guess it's that early rare thing, sure, I get, where it's like there's ambition that you admire, but then the game itself is a little, you know, it can't, you know, match the ambition, and you're kind of plodding around this sort of, you know, annoying series of screens, and you're like, oh fuck, I gotta go back to that house over there. Okay, you know, snake, bat,
right?
And like, you know, and it get, but yeah, I wasn't sure what to expect. I didn't know that if this was like a famous bomb or anything. Was it? I still don't really know.
Some people don't love it. It certainly has been gotten a lot of criticism for being very difficult, which, you know, it has some stretches that are very difficult. Like, what you talked about is like, yeah, it is a little bit nonlinear in terms of, you know, it's randomized which houses are open in which order. So you've got to kind of just like roam the overworld until you find which is a single street. You've got to walk up and down the street until you find which house is open. And then you go inside and you explore and you collect the bones.
But there's not a lot of like, there's nothing in the game that's sort of telling you like, oh, I just got this key, I need to go to the cemetery. You know, like,
right.
You just kind of got to trial and error it, right? That's all I was doing.
Yeah. It's a lot of that context is in the game manual, which if you're a kid, you're just not reading. So it's just, you're just figuring it out by trial and error.
The Friday the 13th game also had you going all over, back and forth and all that stuff. But I felt like that game, even though that game is decidedly worse, I think, if I had to compare the two. But it had it in my memory, it was a little more like, "Hey, go do this." Sort of like it gave you a little more direction, I think.
Yeah, similarly, you had to, like, retrieve various... I think it actually even just tells you at some point, like, you need a torch or you need to go get Jason's mask or whatever the fuck you're retrieving in that game from the various cabins. It's also, but it's also... That game is also way more complicated. I think without that, it would be unplayable.
100%.
Because it's very confusing. But also, like, a similarly, like, kind of game that, you know, had a day-night cycle. It was kind of an ambitious attempt to do something interesting with this franchise when so many of these licensed games were just kind of, you know, just cheaply made and cashed in on the brand.
It's funny the things that you celebrate from this time that were ambitious. And, like, the amount of ambition that would have to be dumped into a game now for you to say, this was an ambitious mechanic. Like, a day-night cycle in an NES game, and you're like, holy shit, these guys went all out. Or, like, a sleep meter that changes the backgrounds of the levels. You're like, fucking A, man, these guys. Also, apparently... The multiplayer was on screen. If you had two players, they were on screen simultaneously. That's incredible. That's Mario Brothers has two people on the screen at the same time, or I'm sure that, like, Street Fighter was also ported to, like, all that stuff has, but still you're like, the assumption you make is that this is mechanically challenging. I feel like now, in order for a game to be considered ambitious, it would have to be like, especially since a game like No Man's Sky, you fly to procedurally generated anywhere in the galaxy. Like, you have to be like, this game reads your mind and then recreates your childhood based, based on what it scans in your retinas. Then we'd be like, holy shit, it's a day-night cycle. Like, like the same... That same sort of enthusiasm.
This game smells like your mother somehow. It pipes it out at you. But the day-night thing is cool, but then, I wanted night to be freakier, and instead it's just kind of a little more annoying. It's more, you know, what if we're, like, upside down, right? Like, or I don't know.
When,
like,
you're in the dream world,
Yeah, that was the thing. I couldn't really deny the ambition. It's a 1990 game, so I couldn't get too mad, I guess. Yeah.
Can I ask another question of the movie based on a mechanic from this game?
Yeah.
Of course.
When people are trying to stay awake because they don't want to fight Freddy. In this game, it implies that all of a sudden you'll just pass out in the street. Is that something that happens in...
Well, if you're tired.
You just... Because, like, you're walking and then they fall... Yeah, they fall asleep. What was that, David?
Well, if you're super tired... I guess there's the thing in the in the movie where they're really trying to stay up and they're like, oh, you know, they're nodding off. Is that... That's about as close as
it gets. That... I'm remembering, like, them, like, you know, putting cigarettes out on their forearms to try to stay awake.
What?
It's like, because they're so, because if you fall asleep, you die. So those are the stakes. If I fall asleep, Freddy is going to kill me in some sort of ironic way that ties into my personality. And so I want to avoid that at all costs. There is a lot of just, like, trying to stay awake for as long as possible, and then people will just, like, fall asleep and not realize they're asleep at first.
I know it's not going to make any sense because we've already done the opening, but it was at this point in the podcast that I came up with the pitch for the opening.
Okay, great. Good to know. Update the Wikipedia. I don't know. I mean, I have mixed feelings on this game overall, but I guess it's just like, it's one of those things where I feel like at the time, and by the way, Heather, you talked about the characters being on screen at the same time. You weren't sure about the 4-player mode. I looked it up. The 4-player mode did have all 4 characters on screen at once.
Holy shit.
So You had to have the NES 4-score adapter, which was a thing I completely forgot about. I totally memory-holed that there was a multi-tap for the NES. But if you did that, then yeah, you'd have all four players on screen at once.
Can you imagine if I was a kid
with three friends in hypothetical, and we had this game and we had the multi-tap, I would think that would be probably a blast to play. We'd probably have so much fun playing this shit.
Yeah, even if you hated the game, just the novelty of four people playing simultaneously in NES times. I mean, like, was there like a hockey game or something that used that multi-tap shit? Like, it would have been.
I didn't have one, so I don't really remember what they.
I mean, I certainly didn't have them.
Sport it, yeah.
Either thing.
Did the Turtles game ever get ported? Like, I know that's a four player, right? Like.
They did port it, but I think it was just two players.
You couldn't do four. Right.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Yeah.
Let's see. Some of the games that supported it were, there was NES Play Action Football, so there was a football game. The Harlem Globetrotters game.
Hey. Probably hilarious.
Yeah. Gauntlet 2. Smash TV. You could have some fun with it.
We could have done it.
What, played Smash TV?
No, I mean, we could have used the multi-tap and really given Freddy what for. All four of us together.
Oh, boy. Can you imagine?
He would have been fucked. Welcome to my nightmare, bitch. That's what I would have said to him.
Wouldn't your nightmare be losing to Freddy?
And not having friends?
Good point. Yeah.
Well, wait.
I want to give a shout out to the ending of this game.
Oh,
where
yes.
There's a screen after you throw all the wrenches in the fire and Freddy dies, there's a screen that I think has a gravestone, if I'm remembering correctly.
It does.
And there is a very poetic you expect in the NES era for the like post game the end writing to be kind of subpar, sometimes in broken English, but this one is, so the evil is purged, fire purifies all, the bones are ashes, soon to be dust. Freddy trademark is dead and the nightmare is ended, or has it?
Right.
A little forced right at the end there with the like, or has it? Right. but yes. The classic horror movie ending where they're like, and tack on a dream sequence at the end where Freddy's alive or something, just so we can have a sequel.
My favorite was I think it was Jason Goes to Hell, where you see Jason's mask and then Freddy's glove reaches up and fucking grabs it and pulls it down into hell. It's really good.
Wait,
it's super cool.
Yeah,
and it took what, 12 years to have Freddy versus Jason after that? Or it was such a long wait. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, wait. So, in the end of a Jason movie,
yes,
Freddy's claw appears with no preamble?
Yeah, I mean, there's always been that kind of like the idea of like, what if these two, you know, met up in the same world? Like, what would that happen? And so they have a little nod to that.
So it's like Godzilla versus Kong.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. And then they do, right? They do
ultimately have a Freddy versus Jason movie that comes out.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it sucks or is good?
It's fun, right?
It's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah. It's it's a weird, it's more of a Freddy movie than a Jason movie,
right?
I would say. Right. It's because Freddy talks. The guy is domineering. Like, it's tough for Jason to sort of match up to him in terms of charisma. Because Jason's a quiet boy. He's you know, he's taciturn.
Right.
But yeah, it's fun. It's stupid.
Well, we should get to our final thoughts on this week's game of Nightmare on Elm Street. It's time for our review crew.
Review crew. Bitch.
For a second, I thought you were McGruff the crime dog. And then
only you.
Then you brought her home.
Stop taking drugs.
Something positive about this game and a numerical decimal rating. You know, it reminded me, I didn't play this game as a kid, but it reminded me of a little bit of a game that has a bigger scope and isn't nearly as challenging, Castlevania II: Simon's Quest, where just like you are just retrieving all of Dracula's body parts to purge Dracula from this earth for all time. And so it kind of reminded me, like, I like that it was like, hey, it's kind of this nonlinear game where you got to go around and collect Freddy's bones and ultimately dispose of them. I don't know. I guess I just kind of like the structure of this game when the easier way would have been just to have like, hey, we've got level 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 in sequence and whatever. You're just going to go do a bunch of platforming and fighting and fight Freddy at the end. I thought this was just like a more creative take on this franchise. And, you know, not super fun to play right now, but like kind of cool to mess around with for a little bit. So I don't know, in the context of when this came out and Rare's entire repertoire, I'll give this like a 6.0. This is a nice even. This is a 6.66. How about that?
Okay.
Hey.
Wow. That's Look you better out. Be careful with that. That's some scary stuff you're dealing with there.
You can't say that number a bunch, or I'll show up in your house, Riker.
all right, Heather. What do you think?
Well, I'll say this game was not for me. I did not enjoy it, but I did enjoy that you can punch a bee to death, because
right.
when you consider what that would take, like not a slap, not an open hand slap, not a fly swatter, a punching a fucking bee and it dies. That's a lot. And this is a regular teenager on all other fronts, like just like walking around, doing his stuff, avoiding rocks from the sky. This guy can punch a bat and a bee and they die in the regular world, not in the dream world. So I enjoy that. I love it when a game. Here's what one of my favorite things in a video game is when it positions itself as taking place in the real world. And then gives you insane powers that if you really extrapolate from them, like you build a sort of worldview that is terrifying. So right. I give this game a 3.33 because I just didn't enjoy it. I didn't like looking at it. And I've never seen the movie, so I didn't have any of that nostalgia. And also, you know, I'm personally pissed off that they misled me with throwing bones in a fire and it not having come from anything. Matt Apodaca.
Well, yeah, I mean, I guess the positive thing for me is that I watched the movie. I enjoyed the movie quite a bit. But positive thing for the game is because the enemies that you'll face change between the dream and the real world.
Right.
And like, they don't make sense. Kind of like, some of them do. Like, the snakes kind of become like a bone snake. Like, you're kind of like, okay, that makes sense. And then, like, the spider kind of just becomes like a scary face with legs. They're some of them are really like funny in that way to me. Then there are ghosts. They're like ghosts, and then they're like ghosts with arms. And I'm just like, okay, well, like, this is like the same.
I think the zombies turn into skeletons, which for me is like a de-heightening.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, I'd rather face a skeleton than a zombie.
100%. I can handle a skeleton. I know what to do. Just play those ribs like a xylophone. humiliate this fucker. Yeah. overall, I mean, it's not like it's not exceptionally bad. It's not good either. So I'll give this a 5, just right down the middle. It's kind of nothing.
Fair score. David Sims, something positive, your score for this game.
I very much like the score, David Wise. I want to shout out Donkey Kong Country 3. That's in my 10 as well. I was just thinking about that. I am an unabashed fan of 3 over 1 and 2. Not that they're not, they're all good, which I think is a controversial opinion, but I don't know.
Yeah, anyway. I don't know.
Whatever. It's a matter for great debate. We can't get deep into this right now.
Is three where Dixie Kong comes on the scene, or is that
it's
2?
Dixie arrives in 2, but is the main in 3, and Baby Kong is her sidekick, and he's in little footy pajamas. I don't know if you remember this.
Yeah, it's doing a lot.
Takes down King K.
Rool
in footy pajamas. I just, like I said, I like the ambition of the game. I like the sort of, you know, thinking behind the non-linear, you know, approach, and I like the coffee meter. I thought it was cool. I realized when it was like speeding up, not just if I took damage, but like if I stayed still, which I thought was sort of a clever idea, because like, you got to keep moving to keep yourself awake, like that. That made sense to me. So there were things like that that I liked, but I did find the game, it's not like it's janky, like it's fine, you know, like the controls are fine, but it was just, I got sick of just dodging all those snakes constantly. I don't love a game where the enemies, you shouldn't even bother fighting them, because it's sort of like, they're just going to come back. That always kind of bugs me. I guess I like it in like Mega Man or whatever, but like, you know, usually it kind of gets on my nerves. And yeah, you know, I'd rather be Freddy. That would be better. I don't want to just be some teen who turns into a ninja. Being Freddy would be cooler. I don't know. I'll give it a 5.5. I'll sort of come between you guys.
That was the prototype of the game, which was that you were Freddy. And it was axed because probably the controversy it would have caused to be Freddy killing teens.
My child is a child murderer now? Come on. What I assume. I don't know. Are you Jason in the Friday the 13th game? You are, aren't you? Or are you not? I don't remember.
In the NES one, you are also teens, and you get to choose your teen. In fact, you choose a team of teens, like Maniac Mansion style, I believe. Unless I'm misremembering it.
So it's not cool to be a serial killer. I guess that makes sense.
Right. Yeah. Although in the modern Friday the 13th, you can play Jason.
Right. Now it's cool.
Now he's cool. Hey, those were our thoughts, but maybe we're wrong.
Maybe we were wrong. We've got reviews that we've collected from all over the internet, and if we had a positive take on this game, these will be negative reviews. And if we had a negative take on the game, these will be positive reviews. It's maybe we were wrong. And I've got some reviews. And I know, Nick, you said, let's just choose one review. But guess what? I've got a ton of them. And the reason I've got a ton of them is because they're from Amazon and they're a single sentence each.
Okay.
So, from Amazon, I've got 5 stars. Brilliant. One of the brilliant unsung heroes of NES. Once you catch the gist of the game, gameplay is unparalleled. Not least of which I play with Game Genie, Infinite Lives, and Super Jumps. This is the best 4-player title on NES. Bring it on. So this person says, this game, once you get the hang of it, unparalleled. That being said, I play with Infinite Lives and Super Jumps. Another review is 5 stars. Best game ever. 5 stars. Great game. Bought this for my boyfriend for his birthday. He loves playing old video games from when he grew up. Thanks. And then finally, 5 stars. Game worked fine.
So often we find with these, it's just, you know, this is the game that I had when I was 11 or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, I had this game and I played it obsessively and I came to overlook its flaws and see it as this, you know, this great game that endures in my memory. And I think that ties in with this review I have from GameFAQs by Shinnok XZ. The hell's wrong with you people? Don't deny it. You were afraid of Freddy Krueger. You know, the guy who was killed by his neighbors because he murdered their children or something like that. Well, he comes back to haunt the remaining neighbors by entering their dreams and killing them there. Of course, the drawback to this is that they would perish altogether, asleep or not. Yeah, me and my 7-year-old buds would play this game that uniquely featured delightful 4-player support and spout off random bluttering such as, Oh my gosh, did you see Scorpion for Mortal Kombat? He was on the screen helping me beat Freddy. Wow. Before, I assume that's a reference to switching into the Dream Warrior. Before we knew it, the wonderful experience of playing through this game would be concluded. Finally, we would all subside to my backyard and claim that Freddy Cougar is hiding behind the old tool shed in the far corner of the yard. Everyone that gave this game an 8 out of 10 or below should be shot. Never had a childhood. Me, okay. On the other hand, I was busy throwing basketballs blindly behind a shed, hoping I would hear the body of Freddy Cougar collapsing on the compost heap. The day would end with a purplish sunset and a rolling mountain foreground, and a new day would start where the adventure would begin yet again. 10 out of 10.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah, I mean, that's strong. That's pretty strong. I don't know. He thinks, yeah. I mean, based on that, this guy wants to shoot all of us.
Yeah, we're dead.
I changed my score to an 8.
Well, this is also like, it's just like, he's just remembering hanging out with his friends and how much fun he had. And he has an association with a game from that. By the way, that was 3 paragraphs pulled from like a 20 paragraph review.
Yeah, I saw that everybody that reviewed this on GameFAQs, that everyone that reviewed it positively had a lot to say.
Yes.
This one is from Aquamentis, and the title is 1-2, Freddy's Coming for You. And they said a lot. They, you know, I had this as a kid. I got it for my birthday, whatever. But then they gave specific scores for each of these points. They gave graphics 6 out of 10, sound 7 out of 10, story 1 out of 10, gameplay 10 out of 10, replayability 8 out of 10, overall score 10 out of 10, which does not add up based on the scores that they gave.
No, not an average.
And you're probably like, what the heck? He gave Nightmare on Elm Street a 10. What the heck is he thinking? Well, despite what you may believe, I had tons of fun with the game when I was a kid and still would have fun with it even today on a rare occurrences when a cool friend of mine might actually want to crank up the old Nintendo. So if this cool friend comes over, he's going to have the time of his life.
It's fun when you're a kid to play games with your friends. That's you know, hey, that's where we're at.
And we're baffled by this because we didn't do that.
No.
We're like, what are they talking about?
That was Maybe We're Wrong. It's time for the question block.
A-ding!
All right. This one comes from @TaylorChadwick on Twitter, and they write, have you ever had a game you were playing transcend into your dreams? Sometimes when I binge a game for too long, I dream that I can maneuver myself with a controller like the game that I'm playing. Control produced some wild dreams for me.
Well, this has 100% happened to me. And then I wake up when I realize it was a dream, amazed by the human brain. That like you, like, because I'm like, for me, a lot of it would be games that I would play up when I was up late at night and then go to bed right afterwards. And so like Diablo 2 was a big one for me, just binging on Diablo 2. And it was all I was thinking about. And then I'd be playing Diablo 2 or some version of Diablo 2 in my head, you know, instead of a barbarian, it was like my third grade teacher or whatever, but I was still fucking playing the game. And I was just like, how is a brain able to simulate like an interactive video game that like I'm doing something with a controller or doing something with my mouse and keyboard and then seeing that happen on screen? Like, how is that able to occur? But yeah, I don't know. I've absolutely had games bleed into my dreams quite a bit. Heather, how about you?
I remember playing Grand Theft Auto 3 for the first time back in the PlayStation 2 era. And playing it for so long that it became like I felt a sort of, I for lack of a better word, like reality sickness. Like everything started to feel really weird because it was the first time that I felt like an approximation of running around in a city had been done on a console game.
Mm-hmm.
And then that feeling sort of prevailed into the evening, into my nighttime, into my dreams, where like being in the dream felt like playing Grand Theft Auto 3 in an unsettling, uncanny valley way. But it wasn't like the mechanics of the game leaped into the dream. It was that feeling of like everything is unreal now, and is only going to get more unreal. How about you, Apodaca? What do you got?
This happened to me, like, specifically when I was a little kid. For The Spider-Man game for PlayStation 1 came out August 2020, so I was 9 years old when this game was out.
And I'm sorry, you were 9 years old August 2020? Is that what you just said?
No, August year 2000. I'm sorry.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I was not, no, I wasn't nine in the year 2020.
I think Matt might be 10 years old.
No. That's not true.
What do you got under that trench coat there? Is there another kid?
Certainly not two more kids. And so in August 2000, I was nine, and playing a game like that wasn't, because I was already playing like Game Boy games, playing Spider-Man game was sort of a big jump forward for me, like in terms of like types of games I would play. So I was stuck on like the tutorial level of that game for days because I just couldn't figure out mechanically what I was supposed to do. There's a sequence at the end of that stage in that first game, and I remember it so vividly. They're blowing up this bank, and like there are bad guys in the bank and stuff, and you have to get everybody out, and you have to make sure that the bomb doesn't go off, or it goes off safely and doesn't hurt anybody or destroy the building. The bomb kept exploding. I kept getting it in the safe, and I didn't know what to do, and I had a dream about it. And I was like, oh, you have to close the safe. And that's all it was. Wow. But in the dream, I was like, oh, if I close the safe, that probably would dull the impact of the explosion and wouldn't ruin the entire building. I was thinking about it in my dream. And I woke up immediately. It was probably like 4 a.m. I was like, I got to do that right now. And I did it. And then I went back to sleep. And it was...
That's amazing.
I was just like, I felt so satisfied that my dream helped me.
Wow.
Your subconscious went to work on it.
Yeah.
And then delivered it. The answer to you in dream form.
Exactly.
That's amazing.
Sort of like a helpful Freddy. Nice Freddy.
Right. David Sims, you ever have a game you're playing bleed into your dreams?
The embarrassing answer is that it's like phone games. Like, I'm sure real games have done that, but like if I am like playing some phone game, like Triple Town, like some like dumb puzzle game where I just like, you know, poke bears and they turn into treasure chests. And I play that for too long, like before bed, then I like see it in my dreams. And that's usually when I know to stop, to put the game away. I wish I had a cooler answer. I swear I must have dreamed at cooler games at some point in my life, but all I can think of is like Snood. You know,
there is something about, because I've definitely had puzzle games I've been playing, you know, like Tetris or Peggle or whatever, like, there's something about a very simple puzzle game that I think, because the action is so, you know, it's just so limited in terms of what you're doing, and it's all that you're looking at and it's all that you're thinking about, that specific thing comes. I've 100% experienced that. How do you pick which phone games to play? Do you just see the ad that is like the temptress awaits you or whatever?
Well, that sounds pretty good, actually. It sounds kind of tempting, so maybe
all those horny ass ads that for mobile games
and like I'm sure
just like
games
trick,
are
like old guys
playable, like my head they heard like the buggiest, like, and like I'm sure you guys have all thought this is like the hackiest rant, but like, you know, those games where it's like, you know, save the landlord from the pipe bursting on him, and they show you it going wrong because they want you to be like, well, I know what to do. I should play the game. It's so infuriating. But anyway, no, I usually wait for someone to tell me like, hey, I just did 6 months of you know, this dumb puzzle game. Like, you need to check. Imbroglio is a game I was very into. If anyone's ever heard of Imbroglio, at me. Let's share horror stories of playing Imbroglio for half a year. It's one of the best puzzle games I've ever played on the iPhone.
Imbroglio.
Check it out. So good.
The game I was thinking about specifically was, Evony. I think so. I know you guys have probably seen Evony ads, but they're all like, save your lover, play now, my lord. And it's some busty woman in like a medieval bikini. But the actual game is just like, it's just like a medieval Farmville. There's nothing lascivious in the game at all. It's just all like a fucking, it's just a honey trap.
Honeypot?
Now that delivers on the goods, from what I understand.
The honeypot game?
Yeah.
Yeah, you get exactly what you're expecting.
Right, you got honey from a pot.
I hit a Hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at GetPlayedPod, or send us an email at GetPlayedPod@gmail.com, or leave us a voicemail at 616-2-PLAYED. That is 616-275-2933. Our music and engineering are by Devin Bryant. You can follow him on Twitter at BaffleGabs, and our guest has been David Sims. I forgot to ask you, Sims, before you go, I do want you to plug what you want to plug, and everyone should check out the Blank Check podcast. I'm a regular listener. Great show with you and Griffin Newman. A great film podcast. But I did want to ask you, as a man with a last name Sims, how did you feel when The Sims released?
Wow. I thought we weren't going to get talk about this. Yeah. You know, a lot of people when I was 12 years old or however old I was when The Sims came out, and I liked The Sims and I played The Sims when it came out. Yeah. Would just, they didn't even have a joke. They would just sort of be like, The Sims, you know, like that would usually be the extent of it. Like you're like The Sims, like,
yeah.
But I hear it. I used to hear it a lot. I don't hear it as much anymore, I suppose. But yeah, The Sims. My name is Sims with one M, like The Sims.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank
you for saying nice things about my show, though. That was really nice.
Check that out. Anything else you'd like to plug?
No, The Atlantic. I review movies for theatlantic.com, so you can always read those and listen to my podcast. And I always threaten to do a video game podcast, and maybe I'll do it one day. Who knows? I don't know. Wow. I do love video games, but God, more work. These things are hard to make, guys. It's a lot of work.
Yeah. I'll also say, as someone with a video game podcast, there's so much work that goes into play. Like
you gotta play these games. Yeah.
You gotta play these games.
Yeah. Yeah. If we could give you any advice, it's don't do it.
Well, you're welcome back anytime.
Oh, please. This was wonderful. I love this show. And you guys are amazing. And thank you for having me.
God bless you. Thanks, David. And hey, Matt, let us know what's next week's game.
Next week's game, the seventh guest. Go to hell, everyone.
Go to hell, Bucket.
Edge of a pit to hell?
Yeah, sure. Why not?
What the? Why is it always this?